that the elite in Equatorial Guinea might be nervous and pre-booking flights as a hedge against a coup did not strike her as particularly noteworthy. The country was like a small, unprotected, oil-endowed bank sitting in a bad neighborhood, just waiting to be robbed. During the 1970s, Frederick Forsyth had written his novel, The Dogs of War, about a mercenary-led coup in a small African country, while staying at a hotel above Malabo's harbor. Forsyth himself later became entangled in a stillborn coup attempt against Equatorial Guinea's dictator. Coup plots seemed to blow through the country like its tropical storms. Leaders of Obiang's fractured and repressed political opposition were regularly accused by the dictator of fomenting his overthrow. Periodically, the president arrested his own relatives for plotting a move on his palace. In 2002, Obiang had detained and tried dozens of alleged plotters, including a number of his relatives, on treason charges. The poor standards of the trial were one reason why the State Department had refused Obiang's pleading for a license to hire MPRI, the Virginia-based security firm, to train his police and military. The United States had earlier approved an MPRI license for maritime defense on the grounds that the Equatorial Guinean Coast Guard posed little threat to the country's citizens and might defend offshore oil platforms owned by ExxonMobil, Marathon, and Hess. Yet the Bush administration judged that training Obiang's land forces to shore up his dictatorship could not be justified until the government improved its human rights performance. Teresa Whalen interpreted Greg Wales's purpose in visiting her as typical of the hustling, networking world of profit-making consultants in the global security field. He wanted to make sure that he could say that he had a contact, that he had access to the Pentagon for some purpose in the future, whatever that might be. But I didn't think that he had a particular agenda, other than making it clear to us that he was a potentially valuable interlocutor, Whalen concluded. It was the equivalent of a sales call or a marketing meeting. For our trouble in listening to him, we would get another perspective on the ebb and flow of the political situation in the region. After Wales departed, Whalen made no record of the conversation and distributed no memos or emails to Pentagon colleagues, she said. It did not occur to her to do so because the entire encounter had been pretty unremarkable. It is not known how Wales assessed the conversation, but it is clear that there was nothing routine about his thinking about the Pentagon's possible role in his coup plan. His fellow conspirators had the impression that winter, based in part on what Wales told them after traveling to Washington, that the United States might actively support their efforts to seize power, or at least that the Bush administration might not object. It is not clear why such an impression might have developed among the coup planners. At the same time, contemporary memos show that Wales and his colleagues knew they faced the risk of alienating the United States, particularly if major oil companies concluded that the change of regime would jeopardize their investments. Threatening American oil interests in Equatorial Guinea, Wales wrote, might be what gets the Marines coming in. Simon Mann served as Greg Wales's principal military partner in the plot underway that summer to overthrow Obiang. He was a lean and poised man in late middle age, a descendant of English cricket captains, who had grown into a formidably successful adventurer. After graduation from Eton, the elite preparatory school, he joined the Special Air Service, Britain's principal special forces unit. Later he founded Executive Outcomes and Sandline International, part of a network of corporations that provided mercenary military services to African governments in exchange for diamond mining and other business concessions. During the 1990s, Executive Outcomes won contracts with Angola to battle a formerly anti-communist rebel movement, and with Sierra Leone to keep anti-government rebel marauders away from that West African country's diamond mines. Mann grew wealthy, bought an estate in the English countryside, another in London, and married, apparently intending to settle down. He and his younger wife started a family, but in 2003, when he turned 51, Mann became restless. Eli Khalil, a Nigerian-born Lebanese oil trader with extensive contacts in Africa, and Severo Moto, the Equato-Guinean opposition leader in Madrid, recruited him early that year, Mann said later in a Malabo courtroom. I agreed to do this for the money, yes, but also because I believed it was right, he said. That spring, Mann learned, he and others involved in the coup planning said later, that Spanish Prime Minister José María Aznar supported the plan. Aznar, a youthful Franco supporter who had become a successful conservative politician, oversaw an aggressive foreign policy. On March 17, 2003, on the eve of the invasion of Iraq, he appeared with George W. Bush, British Prime Minister Tony Blair, and Portuguese Prime Minister José de Raul Barroso in the Azores to provide a show of solidarity for the American-led plan to overthrow Saddam Hussein. "We are committed on a day-to-day fight against new threats such as terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, and tyrannic regimes that do not comply with international law," Aznar declared. "They threaten all of us, and we must all act consequently." The Spanish PM has met Severo Moto 3 times, Mann later wrote, and he indicated that Spain would take concrete steps to support Moto's installation in power in Malabo if the mercenaries' plan succeeded. "He has, I am told, informed SM that as soon as he is established in EG, he will send 3,000 Guardia Civil. I have been repeatedly told that the Spanish government will support the return of SM immediately and strongly. They will, however, deny that they are aware of any operations of this sort." As Mann and his colleagues approached their launch date for the coup, Spain dispatched warships bearing Marines to the Gulf of Guinea. They attempted to dock in Malabo, but were denied permission. The Spanish foreign minister was quoted as describing the naval deployment as a mission of cooperation.